In the nights that followed, I would see the white mist, or hear the crashing waves, or see the rays of the sun around the old man's head. As before, my dreams collided with and sometimes merged with visions and wishes. I slept poorly and woke up often. In the morning, I frequently felt as if I had gotten no rest at all, even though I had been in bed for 7 hours and maybe more. One evening, a sound or maybe a vibration awakened me. For a moment, I thought it could have been an earthquake, and I quickly got to my feet. Once standing, I could see that something was leaning up against my golf bag. A single, fine, brilliant ray of light shone on the leather grip of the old man's homemade driver. I could see the tan, smooth, wrapped leather grip clearly. Even the darker outlines from the precise placement of the old man's hands where they had gripped the club so many times. The beam of light grew wider and more intense, and I could now see that there were two beams of light crossing from outside corners of the room. The light started near the center of the room's corners and spread both up and down all at once. Now the strong yellow light flooded the room. When I looked up, the ceiling was turning from a misty light into a pale blue. The gaps in the corners grew larger, and as they did, the walls dissolved into the ground, and I could hear the crashing waves of the North Sea pound onto the shore beyond Burning Bush. I could hear the old man's voice clearly. "Did you ever see the old photo of Jones taken by the scientist? You could see the club at dozens of points in the arc, all in one picture. 'Twas a scientist who took the picture, I believe." "I'm sorry, what are you talking about?" I just stared at him, still dazed and trying to comprehend where I was standing. "I thought you knew your golf history. But do you know about the true forces of gravity? That's what that study of Jones should have taught you. Nay technique, it was gravity." With that, the old man pointed upward and then turned his finger down toward the sand. I looked around and said, "But why am I here?" We were standing right next to my tee shot, which had nearly flown to the beach. Scattered wind vines and their little yellow flowers fluttered around us. I was wearing my flannel pajamas and was barefoot. The sand was cool against my feet, but the sun was warm. "Do you know what they found out from that study of Jones?" The old man was looking right at me. I knew about the photo and the study. It was done by some scientists at MIT, and it was one of the first high-speed photographic studies relating to golf. One of the most telling findings was that from the top of his swing until where the club approached waist high, Jones moved the club at a speed no greater than the speed gravity alone would have provided. In other words, he simply let the club fall until it reached the level of his belt. Until then, Jones applied no force to the club whatsoever. Even now, it's hard to believe. "Well, since you remember so much about that photo, I'm surprised you did not remember the lesson." The lesson, of course, was that any power a player could apply to the club must be applied gradually and very late in the swing. As I'm fond of telling beginners, the maximum speed of the club should occur either at or even after the ball. "I didn't forget," I said softly. My mind was starting to clear, and I was surprised that all of the details of my tee shot were as clear as if I had hit it but a few minutes before. "I thought the wind would hold the ball and keep it from going left, since that's the only place there was any trouble. I figured hitting the 3-wood was better than taking a chance of ruining your driver. I realized it must have sounded just like I was when I was 12 years old. The old man didn't seem to care about my explanations. He just looked at me and said, "Someday you'll realize you know more about your game than you ever imagined. And you'll learn that you didn't know any of it because of something you were afraid of or you didn't want to happen. All you know, what's worth knowing, comes from what you know you can do because you've done it before, and you know how it feels. When you hit your drive on the first hole, you just put the peg in the ground and off the ball flew. When you did, were you worried about or thinking about where you didn't want the ball to go?" He was right. I had done that many times before. Sometimes when I simply tee the ball and hit it, amazing things happen. When I hit the ball on the first tee, I had no fear of the outcome. Fear has its place, but it doesn't belong on the tee. I had said the last words aloud without meaning to, and the old man heard them clearly. "You're right, lad," he said. "There's plenty to fear in this world, and the others, but none of it belongs on these links." I started to think, but I stopped myself instead. I drew the old man's 5-iron from the bag and settled over the shot. The green was only about 150 yards away, but the 5 seems right, so I hit it. I picked the ball cleanly, disturbing only a few grains of sand. It flew straight and high, upshooting slightly from the breeze off the ocean. I couldn't see where it landed, but I knew it was in the center of the green. I could feel it. "Ah," said the old man, "there was no thinking in that swing." We walked together silently along the sand toward the green, reaching a small, well-worn path that led onto the putting surface. The old Max fly was about 15 feet from the hole. Without a word, the old man tended the flag, feet together, right arm folded behind his back, and I took the hammerhead putter out of the bag. When I sold the putter, I could see a smooth, arcing line form on the green, just a shade or two lighter than the green itself. Before I had a chance to question what I was seeing, the ball was rolling. As soon as the ball rolled over the line would disappear, and at the end of the roll, the ball vanished into the hole. I allowed myself a miniature fist pump and twirled the old putter's hickory shaft. As the old man led me toward the third tee, he spoke. "You never answered my question." "Which question was that?" I asked, genuinely not knowing I had failed to answer something he had asked me. "You told me your father was a great one to spend time with on the golf course. But you didn't tell me why you expected him to make you a better golfer." "To be honest, I'm surprised I said that. My father was not a man who expected performance." The old man stopped for a moment before asking, "What did he expect?" I hesitated for a few moments and thought about the question while we began walking again. I looked out to the gray sea and thought about my father. I thought about what he expected and realized that when it came to golf, he had no expectations of anyone except himself. Bobby Jones said golf was best enjoyed with the convivial companionship of close friends. That was the kind of thing my father would have said. He wasn't like me. He didn't talk about golf. He simply liked to play. I told the old man, "My father took his game seriously, but he mostly enjoyed his time with his playing companions, especially if they were family. He had a good memory for different golf courses and different holes. Even though he had played some really great courses like Pebble Beach and Cypress Point, he was happy playing anywhere. He liked it when I got lucky and hit one a long way that went straight. One summer day, about 10 years ago, I knew he really wanted me to make a short putt I had for a 75 on a really tough golf course. I made the putt and he was very pleased. To this day, that is the best score I have ever carded on a 72 par course. I'm glad he was there, and I know he was too. The getting better fixation was a neurosis I had brought to golf, not my father. He was just happy to be there, to be out on the course with me or anyone he cared about. Think of it, I was never smart enough to realize that I wanted so badly to be better than I was. I missed what really mattered. I missed all those rounds I could have shared with him from the time I was 15 until I started to play again when I was nearly 40. All those chances wasted. I remember the times when my game would go so badly I'd walk off the course. It didn't matter where we were, I would walk all the way in and just wait. I couldn't stand not getting any better. The old man said, "If you pay attention now, you'll learn two lessons. Do you know what they are? I'll tell you. The first lesson is that it doesn't matter when we learn the most important lessons of our lives. Just learning them is enough. The second lesson is that the more we try to get better, the further away from better we get. Getting better is not a healthy goal for a golfer. A golfer's goal can only be to strive and to enjoy it. It's the striving that holds the joy. Not every 15-year-old lad can understand that, but your father knew it, and it's time for you to know it as well. He went on, "You'll come to a day when you realize what you're trying to discover is nowhere else but inside of you. It's not in anyone else's advice, nor a new technique. It's just you. Your father knew it was inside of you, and that's why he had no care about you getting better." I could feel a single tear on my cheek as I listened to the old man. I wiped it away. He was telling me things my heart knew and had always known. I'd been so intent on lamenting the time I lost on the golf course, all the rounds I could have played with my father. I had lost track of all that we had shared over those 20 years. Somehow, I'd put some of that burden on my father. Somehow, he had failed to make me better than I was. A second tear came, and I let it roll down my cheek and dry in the ocean's breeze. That's the end of part 4 of Kingdom of Dreams. Thanks for listening, and I really hope you'll drop by to hear part 5. Thanks again.